You're listening to Her Brotherhood, a place where we share stories and celebrate women who put their lives on the line. You see, we must share and inspire, not only with the little girls out there, but the entire world, women and men, to remind everyone that yes, girls can too, and they're damn good at it. In this episode, we meet Ashby Anderson, an inspirational firefighter, mother, and wife in Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville Fire Department is the third fire organization she's worked with, and she's happier than ever with her professional and personal life. But it wasn't always that way. The path she took to get here was less than smooth sailing. She learned the hard way what it meant to be the only female operational firefighter in an organization, how it felt to be the first female firefighter at a department to ever be expecting a child, and the shocking, or not so much, response by leadership there. Ashby ended up in a specialty of the fire service that she never realized she'd love as much as she does. You can hear in her voice that she has a true passion for the mission, one that became clear to her as a young woman that followed her internal desire to serve others. There's a romantic twist to her journey that includes an empathetic leader and loving spouse of an adjacent department that really hit my heart. Ashby shares with us her experience and wisdom, with a little bonus insight on how she feels when it comes to protecting her child, whose father she co-parents with, from COVID-19. And with that, let's meet Ashby. I am here with Ashby Anderson. Ashby, it's so nice to have you.
I'm so glad to be here speaking with you. Thank you.
Right on. And I'm glad. Thanks for supporting Her Brotherhood and following us along this path. And so tell me, what is it that you do for a living? Where do you work? And what kind of brought you, I guess, to Her Brotherhood? Why is it that we found each other?
I work for Louisville Fire Department in Louisville, Kentucky. I work in the Fire Prevention Bureau, and I'm a fire inspector. My bureau comprised of inspectors, plan reviewers, and then people who also work in public education and outreach. And I'm one of those people. My job function is split between enforcing NFPA 1 in terms of being a fire inspector. NFPA is the National Fire Protection Association. So they are the authority on fire code that my community has adopted. That is the fire code that we enforce, and also are the agency that pushes out educational messaging that we align with. So that is my basis for designing curriculum. I do a lot of research and work with other agencies, of course, and other messages and data, but NFPA is basically the foundation from which I work with.
Well, that's an excellent description. Thank you. And what a great job you have. That just sounds so interesting.
Yeah, I love it. It is really, really great. It took me a long time to find my way here and also to adjust, because I came from being a line firefighter and working in suppression, which I did for about 10 years before I came to the Fire Prevention Bureau. And I transitioned over a little bit unexpectedly. In that change, I was, I guess, not fully prepared emotionally for it, and just kind of really brokenhearted, honestly, to stop fighting fire.
I know that. I know exactly that emotion you're talking about. No matter what line of work you're in, like with the Her Brotherhood kind of routes, like all these life-saving, first responder kind of, you know, military careers that are out there, operational versus planning versus logistical, you know, you go into all these different routes, and going from operations to something else. So you were like suppression / operations into prevention. Mm-hmm. And some folks don't realize like what a shock that can be to your system, especially if it's not on your immediate planning trail. Like if that's not what you were planning on, and it can really mess with your head and your emotions, and it can be a complete loss of identity. And so what was it that brought you from suppression to prevention?
For me, it was having a baby. My husband and I, we have two older children from previous marriages. So we have a blended family, and our two older children are 12 and 15, but at the time they were 10 and 13. So they're a little bit younger, but still much more self-sufficient than a baby, I guess.
Right.
And also being from a blended family, they have other sets of parents. And so our schedule allows
you guys have a whole tribe.
Right.
A whole village, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. So my husband and I were both suppression firefighters, and we worked on the same platoon. We did not work for the same agency, but we worked for this on the same shift. So we were together, or we were at work the same 24 hours, and then we were off for the same 48 hours.
Wow.
And
seems good. It seems good theoretically, right? Like when I was young and first getting started in a fire, I had this like, you know, this invincible complex about the future of my life that I would grow up. And then when I decided to have kids and get married, like it would be this, we're both going to be, you know, this, I'm going to do whatever I want. And I'm going to be able to work and travel as much as I want. And then I just magically take care of this child and have a family. It's like, you have this idea of how it's going to go. And then bam, 20 years later, reality smacks you across the face and it's not that simple.
Right. You suddenly realize it is logistically and financially impossible. So you have to do some reconfiguring. When I was pregnant, I realized that I did not want someone else to raise our baby for 24 hours. I also didn't want her to be without us together as a whole unit for 48 hours. So meaning that if I were to just switch platoons, that still didn't really solve the hole in my heart, you know, that I was feeling. And so during my pregnancy, there were some other factors, of course, we'll probably touch on those later, but I was given an opportunity to apply for a position for the agency that I work for now in the Fire Prevention Bureau. And I went for it and I ultimately got it. But the hours were so much better for us. I currently work 4 10-hour shifts. So it's a 40-hour work week, which of course is, you know, solves that problem, the logistical.
A lot of people are like, well, 40-hour work week, you know, yeah, that's what everybody does. That's regular full-time gig, right? But, and she's saying that's a lot better. But what you're saying is the 4-10 shifts were a lot different than your other shifts. So can you explain what the firefighting shift was that you were working on, like how those hunks of hours really work?
So before, I would go into work at 8 o'clock in the morning and I would get off the next morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then I would be off for 48 hours and it would start all over again. It was essentially every third day for 25 years. And that had so many benefits and I loved it so, so much, but I have always been very conflicted in being a mom and being a mom firefighter, specifically those two things. When we had the baby, I really had to dig deep and,
Cause even if you can do it logistically, so let's say you have like these insane finances and you can pay a nanny to care for him when you want, there's still that emotional and ethical pull that you can't fix with money and time.
Yeah, that was it. It wasn't that we couldn't afford it or you know, how are we going to make this work? It was that I did not want to be away from her for 24 hours. I couldn't resolve that. No matter how I tried to rearrange it, that's not what I wanted. And I was just at a point in my life where that just wasn't going to happen. The hard thing is just because you make a decision and it's something that you make a decision that is problem solving, that solves a problem, it doesn't mean that the fix is going to feel good, I guess.
Right.
I knew that it was what I wanted to do and I knew that it was the right choice and job was a great opportunity and I got it and it was fantastic. But I was still really devastated about not fighting fire anymore.
Right. So there's a big like you're trying to do, you know, you're sticking your finger in the hole in the dam, basically trying to hold things up. And what you're saying is just because you're doing what is right ethically and financially and, you know, motherly, that doesn't mean that the solution to that is going to feel like a magical solution to you. It's very rare that we get to make decisions to fix something in our lives. And that fix is just as happy and wonderful as, you know, the other. I mean, that's, if you can do that, that's somebody please give me that recipe because I don't know what that is. So you always have to make a sacrifice, right? And your sacrifice was to give up that schedule, to give up being primary suppression and then rolling. Yeah. I mean, really what happens is you go from like an operational job where you're responding to emergencies. You've got that, that knee-jerk emotional emergency instinct in you that's going off all the time. Then you're going to like an office job. You're going to become a desk jockey to do planning and prevention and all that kind of stuff. And it is just shock to the soul. And, you know, and then you get so conflicted because you're being a mom and you're trying to be good about that. But then you're like, but I was going to be a super mom and I was going to be able to do everything. And this wasn't going to bother
right.
me. You know? I know right. exactly where you're at because I went from full-time suppression to prevention, just like you did.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just that huge loss of identity. I mean, everything changes when you're on a crew with three other people or two other people, you know, they called you to come. They want you to come and help. They're glad to see you versus being
now you're
a fire marshal where they don't want you there. You're by yourself in a car all day long. You know, it's just totally different. It's totally different.
Right. Yeah. You go from being, then you feel like a rent-a-cop and you're running around trying to enforce all these policies. Right. And yeah, I totally know what you mean. And, you know, I slipped into it by default because we needed to move close to family and it was before I had my baby. And I took the job I was an engine captain and then I went into prevention to do the right thing for family. And then I had my baby later, but you know, lucky for me, it was something that really did. I don't know. I really caught on to it. When I did take the job, it wasn't because I wanted it and it wasn't because that was my passion, but then there were so many things about fire prevention that were the public education, the PR, yes. all of that stuff. And I can tell that, you know, you may have moved to this because you wanted to be a good mother and put your family first, but it sounds like it was a really great fit for you.
Yeah, it is. It is a really great fit for me, like you said. All along during suppression, when we were detailed to do fire prevention activities for all of the agencies that I worked for, I was always the one that would step up and interact with the children and really take the initiative to take that seriously. And I always enjoyed that. It wasn't so much like, well I'm going to take this job because logistically it's better. It was that I did connect with a piece of it, and it was something that I ultimately wanted to do later down the line because I knew I wouldn't be able to fight fire as a 65-year-old woman. So it just wasn't on my radar for the immediate future. So that just kind of unfolded very quickly. But I love it so much more than I expected. And my husband pointed out that he feels, and I agree with this, that I have so much larger of a reach than I did as a fireman. Yes. Like I just have so much, such a greater capacity to do good
and
on a much larger level. Yeah. Than I ever did, you know, on the truck.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah. So that's important. That's important to me. Especially as a mom, I can really resonate with that and, you know, it feels good. It's not as measurable as fighting fire is.
Yeah. There's the piece that, you know, people are always like, I mean, there's some things that women are better at, some things that guys are better at every occupation. Right. And, you know, people can argue this with me with all they want, but it's just what I have observed is one of the things that women are stronger at is like the PR side of things and the education side of things and connecting with the community. Because look at what you're doing right now. I mean, I know a lot of guys that are in fire prevention and education that are really good at it. They are great. But women have more of a strength in this by number, you know, we just do. And whether it's because we connect with children easier or, you know, people that are looking to be educated, but it's just a fact. And it's really great when people do shine in it and they really progress in it. I'm so glad to see them take that leap and do that.
Yeah. I agree. So I'm really glad with where I am now. I work for an incredible agency that's very progressive and they allow me to educate myself as much as I can. And they basically just let me take the ball and run with it.
That's great.
Which has been great because I constantly am brainstorming and have a lot of ideas and there are all these things I want to do and ways I want to reach our community, which is very, very diverse and always, always evolving. But again, it's another huge adjustment coming from that no freelancing and, you know, you're regimented and you have to be in this box all the time and you don't get paid to think, you get paid to act. And
right.
So now it's the complete opposite. So it's been a big adjustment, but it's been a good adjustment.
That's
and so,
great.
Yeah. So
you're going to flex your creative juices, but see if somebody gets shoved into these funnels that really don't want to be there and they really don't have that strength. That's when a whole prevention program can crash and burn because if you don't find the passion, it can really be dangerous. And so it's important that those positions are filled with the people for the right reasons. They may slip in there not intentionally, but making sure we recognize the people that have those. And to hear you say, like, they let me do whatever I want to do. If I have a great idea, they let me vet that out. And that is critical. And having leaders like that are so important. Now, do you feel like it's a department culture that they have there in Louisville, or do you feel like it's a particular leadership set? What do you think that is?
Oh my gosh, that's hard to say. Of course, it has a whole lot to do with my direct chain of command, but I do see other leaders and other bureaus that have that same support. So it's not just, you know, my major and my colonel that support me because that's who we are. I think as an organization, for the most part, that happens across the board. So when people step up and take initiative and take an interest in their community and in their job, you know, they keep pushing us forward. And so I think that's across
the
board.
That's excellent. And I think in, you know, hearing personalities like yours and your passion, what's so crucial is having leadership that aren't afraid that you're going to surpass them. Because sometimes when you get someone as passionate as you are and excited and you have all these ideas, you might get someone in a leadership position that's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, you just need to pump the brakes, little girl, because you're sounding a little more outgoing and passionate than I ever could. And so they suppress those personalities so you know, it can happen. And so I'm glad to hear they're not doing that with you. How in the heck did you come along into fire? You know, tell me about getting started your first year and, you know, just kind of as you got going before you ever even had kids.
So long story short, I went to a high school that emphasized service and community service and getting out there and working with your community.
Now where was, so that was, let's say where that was and the name of the high school. Give them a little shout out.
Okay. So I graduated from Lexington Catholic High School, which is also in Kentucky. That was actually a part of our curriculum. It was mandatory. In order to graduate, you had to do so many community service hours. And I really loved breaking free from the institution and going out into the community, you know, and just being with people. So that was something that I continued to seek. And after I graduated, it took me a very long while, to find my place and to find out what I wanted to do with my life. Because in going to a private school my whole life, it was kind of laid out that you were expected to really, really do something big, like be an attorney or go to medical school, into politics. And a lot of the people that I graduated with do those things. But that was not ever what I wanted to do. It just didn't resonate with me. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do. All I knew was that I liked to be artistic and I liked to help. I always like to help, just help. Not even really be with people, but just to help people.
Right.
So because I'm very much an introvert. So it's not necessarily that I like, you know, working with people. It was just kind of being there to help if someone needed it. Mm-hmm. I had moved to New York to be with my dad and my sisters and my stepmother. And we lived in a small village. And the only volunteer opportunity was to join the fire department. I joined the auxiliary because that's what women did.
Right.
And then about a week later, I was like, but all you do is make sandwiches? Like, I don't want to
Well, how old sandwich. Were you? How old were you at this time?
I was probably 20, 21.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you're joining all these spouses and grandmas and then the ladies auxiliary of the fire. Right.
Yeah. And I was like, this is not what I was expecting. So it didn't take me long to switch over to the suppression side. So that's what I did. And I ended up making runs every day. And I loved the training and I loved learning about everything to do, you know, with fire science and fighting fire and everything that went along with it. So I decided I need to get paid to do this.
Right.
People get paid to do this. And that's what I need to do. I need some health insurance. And I'm spending my time doing this every day. So it's a job for some people, so I should make it my job.
Yeah, you recognize this wasn't a side gig. This is something you wanted to do full time.
Right. That was where the light bulb came on. And then it took a couple of years. I got married. I had a baby. And then my husband at the time and I moved to Florida for his work. And so in Florida, you have to be certified to get hired. It's uncommon that they hire people and then put them through the training, which is what they do in Kentucky, but that's not what they do in Florida. So I applied to a firefighting academy and I got in and I spent a year there and I got firefighter 1 and 2 and EMT and all of, you know, everything I needed to work. And then we moved back to Kentucky and I just started the job hunt. I don't really remember.
At this point, you still just have the one child?
Yes.
And you had your first baby, you were still volunteer status. You weren't full-time working.
Well, so that was when I started volunteering. It was before I was married or had any children. It was just when I was, you know, 20, 21.
Oh, right.
And then during that same period of time, I got married and had a baby and so on. I think that my son was about 2 or 3 by the time I got my first job as a firefighter. And that was a full-time career position. So,
and what was that schedule like?
So that was the same. It's always, for me, it's always been working 24 and off 48. I guess that's just typical of how they do it in Kentucky. When you're a full-time firefighter, you work 24.
So take us after that.
My first job was for a small town, and it was all full-time career firefighters. I was the second woman that they ever hired.
So you got picked up like regular through testing and applying, and then did they put you through an academy?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, written test, physical ability test, which I didn't have to do because I had my CPAT card. It superseded their in-house testing. And so through the interview process, and then I was hired on with a group, 3 or 4 other guys, relatively small group. We had an academy that lasted a couple of months. For me, it was a review, obviously, because I'd been to a military firefighting academy already, but also, of course, learning the specifics about that town and that apparatus and, you know, the policies and procedures. Yeah. Exactly.
And you said how many women were there on the department at the time?
Just the 2 of us.
Okay.
Yeah, the 2 of us. She was on a different shift than I was. She was nice, not overly welcoming, but also not unfriendly by any means, just kind of kept to herself.
Did she have a family?
She did not. No, okay. Not at the time. One of the many things that happened is that the guys tried to kind of pit us against each other.
Which
it didn't work though, because I didn't really care what she did and she didn't really care what I did, you know, like
you guys were a novelty. They're like, ooh, okay. So now we have 2.
Right.
And
exactly. Neither one of us ever took that bait, but we definitely recognized that it was happening. But also I think it inhibited our ability to get close. Or to really,
because you were trying to avoid being a spectacle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all I've ever tried to do, honestly.
Yeah.
And looking back, and something that I recommend to girls or women who are entering the fire service is to really choose a department that has a strong foundation of women, a history of women. It's a well-established group of women. I know it sounds good to be the first or the second, but you are going to be fighting an uphill battle. And just being alone, it's such a lonely career. It can be such a lonely career for a woman, and it doesn't have to be. So if you have the ability to choose a department that has other women, I suggest that. Even coming from me, who is an introvert and doesn't prioritize socializing or really even work friendships, I just think it's so, so, so important to have that network of support, or just someone that understands what you're going through. So,
right. Yeah. Back in, you know, years ago, I wouldn't have understood that. And you telling me that, I'd be like, yeah, lady, whatever. But
exactly.
Now, knowing what we know now, it is amazing how much wiser you can become and see the value in it. Hence, that's why I started this whole Her Brotherhood mission, coming from that sort of ideology and what I learned. So absolutely. That's really great advice.
And it's so great listening to your episodes and hearing everyone's stories that are so different but so alike, and just really resonating with all of the experiences, even though, like I said, you know, all the details are different, but they're all the same.
Right.
It's really good to reinforce that, you know, we're not alone and everyone faces these similar struggles, and that it's not just me that, you know, rubbed somebody wrong or whatever.
Exactly.
It's not.
Feels like it sometimes, though, man. You can go for, like you said, it can be lonely. It can be a lonely job. It can feel like you're on an island, especially when you're becoming a mother and you're doing these things that, you know, nobody else on your ship does, because like it or not, guys, we're different because we breastfeed the kids. We have the babies. Like, yes, there's always going to be a difference no matter how much equality we fight for. There's always going to be a difference. So, and we can't bash it over people's heads and expect every man to see it the same, because not even every woman sees it the same. So, you know, and it's a real struggle to get through. And at this point, you still just had your first son?
Yes, I just had him. This is the same time that my first marriage started falling apart. It just did not survive that transition of becoming a full-time firefighter, career firefighter. My son's father and I divorced. I was a single mom who worked 24 hours and was off 48. And so I was so thankful for the schedule then, because it was so great to have those 2 days to just devote wholeheartedly to being a mom and nothing else. On the flip side, in my younger years, when I was a single mom, that schedule was ideal. But, you know, now when I have a blended family and more than one child, it was absolutely not ideal. So right. That's just,
well, and I realize, like, in the early years too, like when they're really little, I mean, something definitely changes. So like when I first had my son and I went back to work regular and I would leave for weeks at a time for a fire assignment. And, you know, I had my mom and dad and my sister to help me out. And when they're really little, it's different than when they get bigger, like around that 3-4 year old, you know. So even if you're fighting off your own guilt and emotions, there's that point where they realize, like, wait a minute, where are you going, mom? You know, where they're not just worried about being fed and changed anymore. And they start to see it too. Then no matter how hard you're trying, that takes an entirely different twist on your heart.
Mm-hmm. It really does. It really does. And it's different when your child doesn't live in your district, you know, because it's one thing if you're in your district and you can just go to a baseball game or go have lunch with them at school or just pop by. But when, you know, you're going through a divorce and your son and his father live and it's outside of your response areas. And then that's the other piece of it is let's say you're working on a holiday and it's Thanksgiving and your crew, all of their wives and their children come and it's just you. It's just, you know, it was just me for so many holidays and so many family gatherings because they're coming and they're bringing their family to the firehouse, which is what we all do. It's what you have to do.
Yeah.
But when you're going through a time like that and you are that totally alone, it's really, really difficult. So
I think child custody and divorce, those discussions and these professions could, I almost feel like I should dedicate a whole episode just to that because it's, it's so difficult and something that I'm still living. And, you know, then you go into the shared custody and when you have a shift work, you know, like you do, and you've got this set schedule, it can really throw things off, especially when your ex is a firefighter like mine.
Right.
And then you both have these wonky schedules and, you know, you may not, if you have, say you have a week on, week off thing, and then that doesn't line up with your schedule, it could be a long time before you see your child just based on custody schedules. So yeah, I think I need to go deeper into that at some point.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's because we feel alone in this and it is so difficult. And I think that would be a great thing to focus on. And it's even a factor right now with the coronavirus and, you know, the self-quarantine and everything.
Yeah.
So my husband is a firefighter. And so he, of course, is still going to work every third day. My job has changed a little bit in that I'm able to work from home unless I get detailed in for a specific reason. But we are really, truly constantly exposed. And so my son is with his dad right now, and I want him to come home, but also it's just not the right thing. It's very selfish of me to demand that because he's safe and healthy at his dad's. And my husband and I are in and out of the trenches. And that's just silly to bring him to my house just because I miss him, you know. But again, that's the reality, and I miss him, and
it's
hard
that you say that because, you know, I don't necessarily share pieces about my experience, what I'm going through right now, just because I try to respect the process of what my custody stuff is. But what you're saying right now is resonating with me so hard at the moment because my son's father is also a firefighter and he is seeing patients every shift. And I propose that same thing saying, you know, I just really feel like it would be safer for him to be with me at the ranch isolated just for now until we get through this. And then you can make up your time with him later. And, you know, I offered this whole, and to me, it just like what you're explaining, it just made total sense and it just felt right and the right thing to just propose, but he didn't agree. So, you know, and that's a whole other story, but like you just said, you just felt selfish doing that. And I appreciate you talking about that.
Well, of course. Yeah. It's hard. You have to come outside of yourself and say, you know, this isn't about me. It's about our child and where is he healthiest and where is he safest? And the truth is right now it's not at my home because my husband and I, like I said, are both in the mix still. And it will be that way unless we get sick or until this is over. So the best place for him is to be out of all the possibilities of exposure.
That's really some great insight. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
So taken back, so we don't skip too far forward back into our current reality, because that we could talk about forever. You're at this department. You just got on. There's the other woman, and you go through all that stuff. And then take me to your marriage didn't survive that transition. And so take me beyond that.
Long story short, the first department that I worked for, I loved working there. It was a small city. I fought a good amount of fire. I learned so much. I was on a really aggressive engine company. I had a really great captain who was a true firefighter, and, you know, he liked training and he liked exploring and teaching, and it was a good fit. But there was another captain on a different shift at a different house that I came into contact with just because it was the nature of a small department, and, you know, we get shuffled around just by having to fill vacancies on other assignments. So he started messaging me and, you know, wanting to go out to lunch, out to dinner. And I didn't, that's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do that. This is non-related to my marriage. This was actually after we had divorced and I was single.
Uh-huh.
He was not, but that wasn't a factor in my decision. I just didn't want to, you know, just like, you just don't want to. Didn't want to. So he wouldn't stop. He was not taking no for an answer.
And what was his position again?
He was a captain.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a captain. And I told my captain that this was happening. I told other people, lots of other people, like my entire crew, because he would text me and was kind of unashamed about it. They would just say, oh, gosh, yep, that's how he is.
That's just, you know, how he is. That's old so-and-so.
Yeah, that's how he is. That's what he does. Not surprised, you know. And he has, I don't know if he was married then, but he was in a serious relationship and obviously didn't care or whatever. So yeah,
you weren't the first that he'd been pulling this on.
No. But ultimately what happened is that he wouldn't stop. And I kept telling them, you know, he's still messaging me, still asking me, telling me we're going to go out and he wants to hang out outside of work. And I don't want to do that. And they wouldn't do anything. They didn't do anything about it.
Did they feel like it wasn't aggressive enough, or like it wasn't, well, he hasn't done anything physically? Like,
that's so, and looking back on it, I was so naive and I didn't want to make a big deal out of anything. And so I wasn't pushy about it. I would say, right. Oh my gosh, you just texted me. Because we had a common dorm room. My whole crew slept in one open room. So it was like a slumber party. And, you know, we would be laying in bed and talking to each other, like, you know, looking at YouTube videos or whatever. And so I'd say, oh, well, you just texted me again. I'd read it out loud. So it wasn't a secret by any means, but it also wasn't really taken seriously.
Yeah, then it kind of became as a running joke, I'm sure.
It must have. So he didn't stop. And I told him that I wasn't going to go out with him ever. And I didn't want to talk about it anymore. I wasn't comfortable working with him because that was what he was focusing on, was this idea that we were going to hang out outside of work, whatever. And so he didn't stop. So I blocked him. And in blocking his contact, it blocked his work email, which I didn't realize that happened.
Right.
And ultimately what happened is I missed an email from him that was sent out to everyone. I don't even remember what it was about, but I just remember that I was reprimanded because I didn't know to do something, or I didn't have some piece of information. And it was because I had blocked his contact. I got in trouble for that.
Dang. And it just baffles my mind. Cause like these are the ramification ripples that happen. You end up being the one that gets in trouble when they're just looking at the symptom of a much different problem.
Right.
And not addressing that, because it's way easier to address busting her because she didn't respond or know about this email instead of maybe going back in and be like, well, why didn't she know about this email?
Yeah.
You know,
and they knew. I mean, I told them why I had to block him because he won't stop. He won't leave me alone. And then blocking him, it blocked his email. And I didn't realize that, but I should be able to block his email if no one else is going to make him stop.
Right. And was there any respect given to that communication when you talked about again?
No. So the culture of this department was, and possibly still is, it's just very a good old boy system. They're all just buddies. You know, they've been buddies for years and they are who they are and it is what it is.
So the little girl's not going to come in here and wrestle right.
Yeah. The writing was on the wall with that situation. And I just felt very unsupported, just kind of isolated because, well, first of all, I'd never gotten in trouble before. I always just tried so hard and wanted to do right and always
Right. And that right there can knock you off kilter so far.
Yeah, yeah. It really did. I also wanted to come to work and do my job and go home. I didn't want to have to deal with stuff like this, but it was just compounding. And so I was very, very unhappy. And I decided that if something wasn't going to happen about it, then I was going to resign, because I knew that either I had to make a huge deal in order to make it stop, or, and that's not what I wanted. I didn't want attention. I didn't want a target on my back. I didn't want any of that. So I decided to resign, and I knew that I would be able to find a job somewhere else, and that it wasn't the end of the line for me, but it was.
People don't realize how many great people are lost and how many women are lost in these jobs. Not retained. It's one thing if they're even recruited. Then if they're recruited, but then they're not retained, and they go away silently into the mist.
Oh my gosh.
And no one ever even knows.
It happens so much. And then you hear about, oh, well, she resigned, or, and they twist
that story.
She
couldn't handle it.
Yeah, exactly. It's never anybody, because they didn't take accountability in the first place. So why would they take accountability after the fact?
Right. Unless you do some giant mic drop, unless you go out, you know, blazing, or unless you file some huge lawsuit, no one ever knows about it. The stats are so much higher than people that go out silently. And I'm glad that you're talking about that, because we need to hear from more who are like, yes, I left this place. We don't even have to say where it was or who it was. But look, here's a really strong asset to any department. And somebody doesn't have her now because she had to leave. And that's what she felt she ethically needed to do.
And it's sad, because I loved working there. And I still say that. And I still really, really like some of the people that still work there. And I still have good working relationships with them. And we do collaborate on things and information. But that guy has since been promoted to a battalion chief. So to go back a little bit, when I resigned, I put in like a 2-month notice, because we were already short staff. And we were getting ready to hire. And I didn't want to.
You cared about the department that much, and your ethics and integrity were that high, to where you're like, I'm leaving because you guys are so terrible, but I'm going to give you a really big heads up just so that I can take care of you. That's how you are.
That is exactly what I did, because I'd been on an engine company with riding 3 people for almost a year because we were short staffed. And it was hard, and it wasn't safe. I mean, not that it's, I mean, the job is hard and unsafe, but it didn't have to be that way. So I didn't want to put them back in that position immediately by resigning out of the blue after they had just hired.
Right.
So I went ahead and I told the chief that I was going to be resigning, and this was the date. And the other thing was they're getting ready to buy us new gear, and I didn't want them to waste $2,000 on fitting gear for me that I wouldn't wear ever.
And that's how much you cared. You cared about the big picture, and you cared because there were people in that department that weren't bad, and you weren't trying to burn all
right.
them. And
exactly.
did you ever tell them why you were resigning?
I was very vague about it. So with the chief, I was very vague about it. I feel like a different, that was a lifetime ago almost, and like a different person, because now I'm so direct about what my needs are, what is important to me. And it's probably as a result of this journey.
Always depends. I never fault anyone for, you know, I may push people and be like, you need to do this, you need to stand up, or, you know, you should have. But I know from experience, it does not always feel like you can or you should, or
I know.
You'll be protected. I totally hear you.
It's such a moral conflict, because you carry this weight of representing all women and fighting the good fight and being this singular person in a situation, or the first person that this has happened to. And so you want to make it right, and you want to do good for all women that are going to come after you. But you also just don't want the attention and just want to have a good life and just want to enjoy your job. And you can't have both of those things if it's always going to be a fight. Because if I called out every injustice that I've experienced at work, it would just be
on
top of each other.
Because I've definitely had a lot more things I didn't speak up about than things that I did. And a lot of people don't realize that. There's usually a lot that builds up. And like you did, you're like, I'm stepping away from this place. I'm going to find a better place. And a lot of us have done that many times in our career, like you have, and nobody even knows about it. And then it's that one time where you do, or you're someplace where you want to stay, like where I stepped away from the department. It's because I was in a place where I wasn't going to leave. This is where my family was. And people would say, like, you know, why don't you just, the leadership there is terrible. Why don't you transfer, you know, or promote out to wherever? And I'm like, no, this is where I'm taking a stand. This is where I'm not tolerating it anymore. And everybody's got a different reason for that trigger hitting. A lot of times we just walk away and we move on to something better.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I did. And actually just recently, so this was probably 8 years ago, at least five or six years ago. So recently in the news, that fire department was in the news for recruit abuse.
Ooh.
Their chief was let go and they blamed it all on him. And I kind of laughed to myself like, okay, so that's been happening for a decade, you know, he has nothing to do with it. They obviously just wanted him out. And so they blamed the obvious on him. But anyways, that was my perspective from that situation. So my chief said, why are you leaving? You know, don't go. What's going on? Like, I didn't realize he was kind of untouchable to me. Now I'm much more comfortable vocalizing things to my command staff. But then as a young, new person, I was not at all comfortable enough to tell him what was going on. So I didn't. But the city HR lady, I did tell her. And she said, these are pretty serious allegations. Have you considered filing a claim? And I said, yeah, I have. And I'm deciding not to, which is why I'm here right now, because I want this to be over. That's why. It's because I want it to be over. And the only way to end it is for me to end it. And so that's what I'm doing by walking away. So that's what I did.
Yeah. Well, I respect that. And everybody's got to do what they've got to do to survive. And if you look at it like this, so you dealt with that. You walked away and you look back. Sometimes you're like, well, should I have really spoken up? Because your thoughts are always like, what about the next gal coming up? What do I owe to her?
Yes.
Or what if I didn't speak up? What if this hurt somebody else? Absolutely. There's always those guilts. And it's the same with about reporting an assault or anything like that. But then you have to look at it on the long game too, because you had to step away for what was best for you and your child. You stepped away. You eventually got to a place in a department and a marriage and everything else that is so much better. And now you can come all the way around the horn and share your story to protect women in the future. So don't feel like you didn't do something about it, because you're doing something about it right now.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you for that reminder, because I do struggle on it. I do. But that puts it all into a much better perspective and a much bigger picture. And it makes sense looking at it that way. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's not black and white. And, you know,
no.
To some folks, they think it is, but it's just not. And you have to look at the long-term value and find other creative ways to do good and protect people. And right now there's going to be gals listen to this. Doesn't matter if it's that department that you were on or another department, they're going to hear your feedback and what you did. And then they're going to be thinking about that. So you're actually, in the end, you're affecting a lot of departments and improving a lot of departments. Cause I think that something that is more powerful than anything that could ever be on paper or anything that could ever be in a courtroom is social justice. You know, you can throw in a complaint or you can go out with a letter telling them what all they're doing wrong. And it usually dies right there. It's so hidden or wrapped up in paperwork. But if you go and you talk about it out loud to where other people are hearing it, that brings justice to things nowadays a lot faster than some of the official capacities. Not saying still don't do the official things, but sometimes this social stuff actually makes a lot more change.
Yeah, you're right. You are. You're absolutely right. That's so true. I never looked at it that way. You want to hear the next chapter?
Of course.
So then what I did was I went to work for a department where I knew all the guys. I'm also a CPAP proctor. So a huge majority of the CPAP proctors that work with me worked for one department, a suburban department in Louisville. I went and worked there because I had already known them for a long time. I knew that they had respectful, responsible working relationships with me already, and that I was not going to have to deal with any of that stuff that I had to deal with before. So I felt very safe and supported in going to work there. And that is exactly how it was. I mean, everyone was great, as I knew they would be. That was a non-issue. By this time, I had met my husband and we were dating, and then we found out that we were pregnant, which was great and exciting. And then we started navigating those waters together. He worked for, well, he still does, a neighboring department. We were on the same shift, as I mentioned before. And so it was really fun because whenever I had a fire, he would be there just because of our automatic aid agreement. So I didn't have to work with him for 24 hours. I only got to work with him on the fun stuff.
You worked adjacently to each other.
Right. Yeah. So it was great. It was an adventure, and it was really, really good. When I found out I was pregnant and I went to the department head and told them, they said, okay, so we've never done this before. We're going to have to figure this out. And I said, okay, you know,
I've never done this before. They didn't had never had a female firefighter.
Right. They had had, I think they had had a female firefighter before. It was a combination department. So there had been many female volunteers. And I think there had only been one career female firefighter before, but certainly she was never pregnant when she worked there.
You were currently being paid firefighter. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so before you found out that you were pregnant, were you already aware of what your options would be, or was that something you needed to find out that you had to explore after?
No, I did not. So I had, the structure of this department is different than the structure of the department that I worked for before and that I work for now. So I've worked for three, two of whom are city agencies. This one was a suburban fire district. So in Kentucky, it's called a Chapter 75, which is a fire protection district, which is essentially governed by a board of trustees. So now where my big boss, of course, is the mayor, there it was a conglomerate, a board of trustees. Again, being kind of naive and thinking that everything is almost always the same, it isn't. All policies are different from agency to agency, and this was one of those circumstances. So this agency was so small in that there were only 12 full-time paid staff, and I was one of the 12, and I was coming from somewhere where there was a little bit more, maybe like 50 or 60. So, but in only having 12, they did not have a light duty policy.
Oh, wow.
Because they didn't have the staff to cover that if
right.
someone went off injured. So my platform was, so I'm not injured. I'm not hurt. I'm having
right.
a baby.
Right.
The baby's coming in January. There's an actual end date to this. It's not
foreseeable.
Like, we don't know if I'm ever going to get better again.
Right.
You know, it's a thing. It's a measurable period of time.
Right.
And again, it's also not an injury. I don't need to not be at work. I just need some kind of modified duty or adjustment or something. But in that this fire department is governed by a board of trustees, the board of trustees meets once a month. They did not know how to manage the situation.
So they had a meeting. They had their monthly meeting, and they're talking about
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
This
uh-huh.
fire. Okay, so we got this girl,
yeah.
and she's going to have a baby. What are we going to do?
Right. And also, I think it's important to note that the board of trustees, these people, there are two, I think, that were firefighters, and then the rest of them are property owners and business owners in the community.
Right,
so they have no background. They don't know, you know, whatsoever, really what the job entails or the sense of urgency that goes behind making a decision like this, ultimately.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if they dragged their feet or if, of course, a month.
Well, you know,
part of it,
they were terrified of you, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
you knew
course.
That. And what year was this?
This was the year before last. It
That's
was
so crazy. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So 2017, I guess. She was born
wow.
in January of 18. So
we're
it was
still there,
not,
you guys. We're still
right.
there where we don't know what the hell to do. Oh my God, a woman's going to have a baby. But this
I
is
know.
Why depart. Like, this is why some places and some groups and some cultures are still terrified or they don't like having women work there because of this. It's still, we're already here to 2020 right now, and there's still a lot of employers that don't know what they're going to do if a woman becomes pregnant. It makes her an anomaly if she's in a profession that is so male dominated. And it's just, it's not because they're trying to be jerks. It's just where we're at. It's where we still are at in some places. And if they, because you only learn something by experiencing it, you know, it's on the job training. And if they haven't experienced having a gal in the department that had, you know, that's the only way they really learn. And so
right.
that's crazy to me, but not surprising.
It is crazy to me also, of course.
So
but
you got
also,
to be the guinea pig, the trainer, and, you know, you gave them all their experience. So now you get to be the one to help them learn.
Yeah, but I, even though I was the first one to work there, I'm not the first one in the universe, in the world.
Right.
You know, I'm not the first pregnant firefighter ever in the history of the planet.
Right.
There are other agencies that we can reach out to. Hey, how did you all navigate this?
Well, there is
how did
Google.
You make it work?
You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
there are multiple resources and people who have been there before. And fortunately, one of those people was my union president, a female. So
wait a minute. She was a female when this happened? You had a female union president?
Okay. So, yes. So
okay.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
So we had a union for all of the suburban departments. So it wasn't just for mine. It was for, I think there was about 12 then. And so, and it was not a recognized union. So even though it is an established IAFS group, it isn't, you know, they don't have bargaining rights. Very few people were members for that reason. But I have always been in the union and always believe in the support of the union. And so I was a union member. And so I reached out to her and she really, really helped me navigate it because she had navigated the same thing at her department when she had her son. She was either the first or the second one to be a full-time career firefighter. There wasn't a policy in place. And so she knew exactly. She knew. She'd walked that walk before.
Right.
She reached out to my chief and I don't know if she ended up speaking to the board or not, but ultimately what happened was I stayed on the truck until I was 5 months pregnant.
Wow.
Which is
by choice.
Yeah, it's yeah, because it was either that or not have a job. So
right.
I was
so
given,
and by and in that I don't think that's really what I qualify by choice. I think it was that or not get paid. And so to me that really
exactly.
isn't a choice. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I wasn't given every time there was a board meeting they'd say, okay, so we tossed this idea around, but we haven't come to a decision yet, or no one ever had a solution that was agreed upon by everybody because they kept going back to, but we can't have light duty because we don't have the staff to cover it. But
you guys want to make it difficult for a woman and any employer, make her the subject of your monthly meeting. That'll shoot her in the foot faster than anything else.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Oh my gosh. No kidding. Yeah. No kidding. In the meantime, you know, my captain was like, so you can just drive. You can just drive. You don't have to go in and fight fire, which is great if you're first in or second in. But then, you know, if you're third riding company, you're going to go in and fight fire or do overhaul. Like you can't, you're not going
right,
to be.
I'm pretty sure in the driver's PD, it doesn't say will not go to extreme measures, will not fight
only
fire.
Only ever driving. Yeah,
right.
That's not. But I mean, I do appreciate that on that company level, I was given these alternatives because,
right.
you know, helping me out on some level. And then another really great thing that happened was that my husband, who's working this same shift that I am and his crew, they start jumping every single run. So that knowing
oh
that I'm still on the truck.
Aww,
yeah,
man.
I know.
Jeez,
I know.
God, look at that camaraderie, you guys.
I know. Well, it was really, really great. And honest, and another thing that sad piece of this is that my husband's sergeant who really did that, who took the initiative to do that, of course with my husband's, you know, suggesting or saying,
sure.
Hey, this is what's going on over there. He passed away from cancer right before the baby was born.
Aww.
Like he was diagnosed and then had a very rapid decline and was just a couple months later passed away. So that was really devastating. But I think of him fondly in many pieces of my husband's career and mine also, but that always is another good thing.
That's
memory
great,
of him.
It's great to have leaders and mentors like that in your memory because that's what inspires you to do the right thing in your future.
Yeah, exactly. And another great thing that he did is he would stop the truck in the middle of the road to get out and give a child a fire helmet or a sticker. So he was one of those guys
that was
gung-ho about the importance of prevention too. And so I carry him with me in my heart every day. Those guys, thank goodness for them, they just started jumping every single run. So I didn't have to do dumb things like extricate people out of cars and, you know, fight fire 5 months pregnant.
That's pretty neat. And, you know, I just Googled, female firefighter pregnant. And the first two things that pop up are an article, how to deal with the pregnant firefighter.
Yeah.
From fire
how
rescue.
To deal with it.
Yeah. And the
like,
second one.
Misfit child.
Right. How to deal with it. And then pregnancy and firefighting. Is firefighting bad for your baby? It's like, oh my gosh, do fire departments have to provide, you know, because not long ago there was that whole throwdown in Florida, that department, that gal who really hit the news about it with being pregnant on the truck and all that.
I remember that.
Like you said, it's not the first time.
Right. It's not. It's not the first time.
So they're jumping calls. All that's going on.
Yeah. And so my crew, they're taking the load off me as much as they can so that I don't have to do all these crazy things, you know, but the mental and emotional toll is really wearing on me. And also, again, here comes that feeling again of not feeling supported by my administration. And here I am again in a situation where well, we haven't had a woman before, or this is just the way it's always been. Adapt to it, you know, figure it out on your own.
And right, so, and you're trying to not be the problem. That. Yeah, you're just trying to be a human being. That's all.
I just want to, yeah, that was taking a toll on me. And it was a lot. It was a lot to navigate. And also, I mean, I just was constantly overthinking everything. Like, well, what carcinogens am I exposing myself to? Like, what is this too hot? Just all these things. Like, is the baby okay? Is the baby okay? Is the baby okay? Just not knowing and just, but, you know, huge moments.
People are paranoid like that on a regular basis. Anyway. They work as a secretary. Yeah. So you throw this in there, and there is no book. There's no, like, what to do. And
so finally, I guess in the fifth month, they made a decision. They wrote some policy that said, and they didn't even know at the time, and I don't know if they do now, but it wasn't even a legal policy. But anyways, it said, from here forward, we will not, because they didn't have any policy, any light duty policy. They just didn't have one.
And which so I will give, one. I mean, I will give them this, like every policy that we've ever come up with in any organization always happens because they ran into the issue, right? And then they are like, now we got to write a policy. So, I mean, I get it. This is when they're very first trampling on it and
Yeah, I understand that for sure. But they were hyper focusing on this light duty issue and for injury based light duty. And that is not what it was. And so that was just really troubling for me because I was like, stop trying to address this non-existent issue in light duty.
Unless you want to turn it into a injury. And that, because that's what a friend of mine who is a correctional officer, she's still, you know, they've come out on top and a lot of her stuff, but she was still at the prison and something happened and she lost her baby really far into her pregnancy. And she's been in court with now a whole group of women in California, but because of this right here and that, and we're talking about the state of California correctional department didn't have it figured out, you know, so a little department out there, it's just crazy. We're in 2020 now, but it's still happening.
It is crazy. But a good thing that came the following year, I believe, well, in 2019 was that Kentucky adopted the Pregnant Workers Act. Mandates that pregnant workers must be offered alternative job duties. If they work a job that is not conducive to sustaining a healthy pregnancy, then they must be offered some kind of modification so that they're not doing unreasonable work.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Or giving the alternative to not work. So that's the great thing that has come with it. So whatever the verbiage of that policy is that fire department wrote.
But I guarantee you that came out of a lawsuit. That came out of something that really pushed them to push that. Right. You know, it didn't just, it's really hard to get an organization to be proactive, to look out ahead. And, you know, because they're just still trying to catch up with whatever other lawsuits and policy issues they have. So, but, I mean, we got to be as proactive as we can, especially with something that women have been doing since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Like, that's not being proactive. Well, that's just being, I don't know.
I know. But also, you know, the image of the fire department as being such a family-centered organization and, we rally around families and that's so important to us. But yet you're not embracing this situation that is all about a healthy family. I don't know. I again felt very unsupportive in a different element than I had felt before, but still.
Well, you're talking about the women's auxiliary side of things, you see, when we talk about family friendly, that's when that traditionally falls back to like, well, I'm sorry, when we said family, we mean like the whole family comes out to the picnics, like the women bring the kids, you know, that's kind of that traditional part.
Right. So I was just thinking this probably isn't a good fit for me because I don't really know how I feel about, it's hard to say, not necessarily the direct leadership, because again, it's a board of trustees that are making decisions who are, you know, out of the picture, but just the agonizing weight of, you didn't decide anything. So now I have to wait a whole other month. This is crazy.
Yeah. While the baby's growing, I mean, it's no secret as to what your timeline is.
Right. So they finally made a decision that they would give me modified duty. That's what they did. I worked during the days. I really don't even remember what my schedule was like, but I was given duties that did not include heavy lifting or any kind of being in an IDLH environment. I would still make some med runs with my chief if there was, if there was a CPR call or something. I wasn't in an IDLH environment anymore, and that was good. But shortly after that, I had some complications, and so my doctor pulled me from work anyways. So it would have been a non-issue, and it was. Mm-hmm. My modified duties didn't last very long as it was.
But that still wasn't the point.
Right. I mean, we didn't, you know, they didn't know that. No one had a crystal ball. This isn't going to last that long, so it'll be fine. So I had the baby in January of 2018. And actually, the day before she was born was the day that I interviewed for my current position.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. During the course of my maternity leave, I was in the hiring process for Louisville. And I was offered.
So we can say that this was all motivating you to put in further jobs.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, that's the truth. I took the position with Louisville and I started working there when River was about, she was about, I think, 3 or 4 months old. So that's where I am today.
That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So finally, although I went through that so much life change at once, having a baby, switching agencies from one job function to something very different, it has come full circle to now where I work for a very progressive, a very supportive command staff that embraces my ideas, and I feel supportive and supported, and I feel valued, and that it
Well, and that's
me,
what I wanted to point out is that you had to leave two departments, so there were
Right.
There were two departments that lost you as a very, I keep thinking of an asset. You were such an asset to those departments because they didn't make you feel welcome. And it wasn't things that you were asking for that were anywhere outside of normal. You know, you didn't feel comfortable in those departments for different reasons. And so you moved on. And that's, I have to say, the cliche thing is that is their loss.
Yeah. It's sad because as a woman, you often feel like you're being really high maintenance and just asking for regular and vocalizing just regular needs, not necessarily leniency, but if you have specific
like human
needs
rights
in terms of
stuff, though.
Right, like pregnancy or privacy or even proper fitting PPE. I mean, we have needs that are specific to being a woman. And if you're made to feel like you are being excessively high maintenance and vocalizing those, it can be cause a lot of separation.
Something that just came to my mind, because I'm thinking like, oh yeah, it's the whole minority thing. And I just hate just that being the word, but you know, it's one gal and a group of a whole bunch of guys. But I just started thinking about my kid's baseball team that I coach. He's a lefty and we don't have a whole bunch of lefties. Right. And it's always a pain in the rear. It's like, oh, all right, do we have a left glove? Do we have a left catcher's glove? You know, or we go somewhere and we're going to, hey, let's play catch. Okay, hey, there's a bunch of gloves over here. Great. Well, is there a left-handed glove? Oh, no. Well, sorry, my kid either can't throw. He's either going to be horrible at it or he just can't play. You know, and it's the same thing. You throw a chick in the middle of a bunch of dudes in a department or whatever else it is. And then just because you need a left-handed mitt, now you feel like a pain in the rear.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just
true.
It's the same thing.
Right.
But lefties get treated better. That seems to be a little more accepted than having a kid.
Gosh.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that you've ended up in a place where you feel like you can really thrive. And even in a place where you feel like you can have this conversation in a public forum. That says a lot, because you'd be amazed at how many people out there are terrified to talk about what color the sky is because they don't trust the organization they're working with. And they don't feel that freedom.
Right. Yeah. It took me a really long time and it still is scary, but it's important. And things that are important aren't always easy. So I feel, and also in my position as a CPAP proctor, I get to interact. So now it's mandatory in the state of Kentucky that anyone who wants to be a full-time career firefighter has to take the CPAP. So I interact with almost every female in the state who is in the hiring process somewhere or thinks they want to be. So I get to know them on a certain level and coach them and guide them and give them some pro tips, you know.
You're a mentor. And that's important.
Yeah. I try to be as best I can, depending on, you know, their willingness to open up or whatever.
I think that's great.
That's something that I really, really make clear is that I think it's really important that you go to work for an agency that has a history or a foundation of women, because you think it's a noble thing to fight that fight, but it's going to become the only thing that you do.
Yeah.
And if you want to go to work and do your job and go home, you're not going to be able to do that at an agency where you are the first and or only women. And in Kentucky, that's just where we are right now. We're way, way far behind other parts of the country where that ratio is closer. Even in fire prevention at Louisville, I'm the only woman.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's fine with me. It's not always been that way. There have been a lot of women in fire prevention, but right now I'm the only one. And in Louisville, for the department as a whole, I think there are almost 500 of us, and there are only about maybe 10 or 12 women total.
Yeah, like, and even that makes me think like, oh, good job. That's really great numbers.
Yeah.
You know, and there are a lot of departments that are growing by leaps and bounds, and which is a great thing. And I believe that women need to deserve the position. There's no doubt. I don't like them to see being hired for the numbers. And, you know, I think it's important too, is because somebody will hear this and they'll be like, well, shoot, now I'm already at one of those crappy departments, or one that's not progressive, or one that doesn't have a good female base. And, you know, the important thing is that if you do find yourself there, you end up on a department that is that way, is reaching out, like you were saying, to a mentor, finding your tribe, finding someone. Yes. And that's why we're doing all this social media stuff, is because it's why I do the Wildfire Women group that I have. Because the same thing in Wildland Fire, like there were few and far between, and we just never got to have conversations like the one we're having right now at your own department or your own location. So if you find yourself on that island, just find your tribe, reach out, whether it's social media or whatever it is, because you're not alone in the grand scheme.
That's so true. Yeah. And I don't want to sound like you're shooting yourself in the foot if you make a decision to work for an agency like that, or if you are already with one, because there are so many benefits to being, you know, every agency is different, and they're all great for their own reasons. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing, but if you
have a choice,
pretty specific about what your needs are, and if you know going into it that you need to be supportive, then you need to do what you said, either make sure that you find or establish that tribe, that network, or you go into one where it's already there.
Right. So, well, and every discipline out there is attracting, you know, because they can go recruit them all they want, but you have to retain them. And whether it's police departments, military, I mean, women are seeking out the ones that have the reputation for the good and going away from the ones that are bad. I mean, so if a department out there wants to attract high performing women to fill those positions, you just got to get the reputation by doing the right thing, and then they will come to you.
Right. I agree.
Well, it has been a pleasure to chat with you, I've got to say.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I feel honored to speak with you and to tell my story. They seem so small and
no, they're not
insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but they've definitely shaped me into who I am, and also help me find my voice and just be very clear and direct about what my needs are, and be unashamed of those needs.
Well, that's really great, because it's not just the news stories we need or the court cases that we need to talk to. We need women like you who are like, I feel like my stories are so small. It's like, no, your whole life experience is exceptional, and people need to hear from you.
Oh my gosh. Well, again, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm just so glad you've been here, and I hope that you guys get through this corona thing fast, and you get to see your kiddos soon, and I hope it all goes well. How is it going there in your community for all of this?
Oh my gosh. Kentucky is doing really well. Kentucky seems to be doing really well. We have a governor who's very communicative and touches in with us every day at 5 o'clock. He has a press conference and updates us on where our numbers are. And so we're doing the best that we can. It's just so difficult because the entire world is learning about this virus more and more every day. And we're all just kind of taking it one day at a time. And that's all that we can do. And then as an agency, we're doing the same thing. As a city and as an agency, we're doing the same thing. So we have two guys who have had positive COVID-19 test come back, and then their crews are self-quarantining. Our dispatch has enacted specific that they include on dispatch so that they know to wear the appropriate PPE if it's a suspect of a possible COVID-19 case. So going into it, we at least have that heads up to wear appropriate PPE to protect ourselves a little bit more. And then we've adjusted our numbers in terms of, we only have two people going in on these runs as opposed to all four. So we're doing the best that we can. Of course, there are some of us that feel like we could be doing better or doing more. But again, we're all just finding our way as we go along together. So
well,
right
2020
now,
will definitely be a year we never forget. That's for sure.
Oh, I know it. I know it. I know. But it's just that trying to you know, be at home with the children and help them keep up with their schoolwork while also working from home. It's a lot. It's a lot. But it's also so beautiful seeing our community come together in their own withdrawn way, whether
it's of the most difficult times, but one of the neatest times I think we're going to see in our generation.
Yeah. I mean, I love just seeing, we've had some really great weather over the last week and seeing families out walking together and playing and drawing on the sidewalk and chalk. And
I mean, I taught my kid how to carry the one and borrow from the other number, you know, so it's like big changes here.
It is amazing. I mean, that's a big deal right there.
Right. I can't believe it, but
you know, we're taking it. We're doing the best that we can. We, my bureau is working from home right now so that we're not up close and personal at headquarters like we usually are. So, and then if we have a specific assignment that we need to get detailed out to, that happens, but we're not all reporting to headquarters all day long like we usually do.
Well, good. Good to hear all those things. I hope you guys stay safe and I hope, you know, and keep me updated if there's ever anything you want to share or do a conversation later. And because I think we almost need to do like a few different, just focused on being pregnant in the fire service, being pregnant in the military service, you know, like one that's just all about that. So when someone looks it up, they can find that interview.
I think so too, because I did the same thing that you did, which Google it. And so did my husband.
We're all like creating the damn wheel every time.
Right. And so, I think we should definitely, you should come up with a resource so that people have that.
Well, I feel like we're all coaching each other all the time. We're all mentoring each other, but it we are recreating the wheel every time and departments are doing the same thing. So I think that, so we might do that. And if I do an episode like that, I would love to have you come back.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to participate in that.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to let you get back to your day.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for being here. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Alrighty, bye-bye.
Bye.
That is all we have for today's episode. I just want to say what an honor it is to spend this time with you. I know there are truly many challenges facing everyone right now. No matter your profession or personal situation, every single person in this world is feeling the effect of this pandemic. And though it's absolutely what they signed up for, our first responders, including every branch of the military and all workers in every occupation who are risking exposure to provide vital services to the public, deserve a true nod from all of us. To all of you out there, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. And please, if you aren't already, please follow the health recommendations and let's get through this as quickly and safely as possible. If you appreciate this podcast and the Her Brotherhood mission, I could use your help keeping it moving forward on the inspirational pace it is, especially in this time. You can become a patron at patreon.com or donate via PayPal. Both of those links are in the show notes. And if wearing merch, drinking from one of our cups, or grabbing a sticker is how you'd like to show your support, there are links to that too. I'm loving my new shirts and sweatshirts. The guys in my life are even sporting them, and I have to say, it really warms my heart to see men young, and I'll say not so young, supporting women who put their lives on the line and my passion to serve as many as I can with Her Brotherhood. Now, go forth, do good, and lead with fire.